every piece of legislation having to do with taxation, revenue, and how money gets spent by our state government has to go through the 16-member Joint Finance Committee of the state legislature. That includes Wisconsin's two-year state budget. Democratic Governor Tony Evers introduced his third budget proposal in February. For the third time now, the Republican majority on the Joint Finance Committee started deliberations by rejecting a long list of the governor's initiatives. Last week, the committee took its first actions on the next state budget. In a 12-4 party line vote, it removed 545 of those proposals. If lawmakers and the governor don't reach a new budget agreement by July 1st, state spending would continue at levels set in the current state budget. Wisconsin is expected to end its fiscal year with a surplus of more than $7 billion. One of the four Democratic members of the powerful Joint Finance Committee joins us now. We have invitations out to Republican members as well. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about how the state budget is built? What are your priorities for spending in Wisconsin? What do you want state lawmakers to consider before agreeing to a spending plan? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. LaTanya Johnson has represented the 6th State Senate District in Milwaukee since 2017. Before that, she served in the State Assembly. Senator Johnson, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you're on this Joint Finance Committee. I like the legislature at whole. There's a solid Republican majority. What do you think of your role? How do you see your role as a member of the four in that 12-4 division?
Well, basically being on Joint Finance, especially when you have numbers that low compared to my 12 Republican colleagues, basically your role is to be the voice, to use your words to try and get the message across, especially regarding the governor's budget, why that budget was important, why it's significant, and why so many people across the state had input in that budget and wanted to see things implemented.
The budget covers a lot of ground, and the 545 items removed from the governor's budget by Joint Finance last week had a lot of different elements. I want to start with gun control and gun safety measures. Your Republican colleagues removed a lot of those. Some of them, they said, because they weren't a budget item, because they were separate, you know, guns and safety items, not part of the budget. Were you sorry to see those removed from the budget?
I was extremely sorry to see those items removed from the budget, especially being from Milwaukee, because we have so much gun violence here. You know, in warmer months, people look forward to the summers just simply because they get to shed the layers. But here in Milwaukee, we don't necessarily look forward to the summers because we know that that's going to come with an extra level of gun violence. And the items that the governor put in the budget were basically the bare minimum, the things that people agreed with, like universal background checks. We know that 79% of Wisconsin voters say that they support having background checks for the sale of firearms, the extreme risk protection order. We know that, you know, individuals support having guns removed from individuals, especially in times of need concerning their mental health. So those were just some of the things that were removed. But other items that did have a physical impact were the sales tax exemption for gun safes and trigger locks and gun barrel locks. We know that those things are equally as important. And being able to remove the taxes from those items you know, would kind of assure that they are affordable for everyone, especially in terms of being able to secure something as safe as a firearm.
Do you have any hope that some of those items might come up as separate pieces of legislation and have a chance at bipartisan support?
I would love to see these items come up as standalone bills. Unfortunately, that's not what we've seen in the past. When it comes to any type of movement in terms of trying to restrict or just trying to make it just a little bit more difficult for individuals who shouldn't possess guns to not be able to get them, we continue to have pushback from my Republican colleagues. The very thing that they're fighting for, the Second Amendment, for the majority of law-abiding citizens, they would have no problem passing a background check. so those individuals would not be affected. But the federal government has a very dangerous loophole when it comes to being able to purchase a gun. And basically that federal loophole allows guns to be purchased at gun shows or through online vendors without background checks. So that means that if you are a convicted felon and you're in search of a gun, you can buy one from online, from armslist.com. And they're not going to ask you if you're a convicted felon. They're not going to run a background check. They're just going to sell you the firearm. We know the majority of people are law-abiding citizens. So if there was a law in place that said all gun purchases had to go through a background check, we would see that happen. But unfortunately, that loophole allows people to get away with purchasing guns and not having to disclose the fact that they shouldn't have them.
Talking to State Senator LaTanya Johnson from Milwaukee, member of the state's Joint Finance Committee, about the two-year budget plan currently in the works in the state legislature. We've been talking about some firearms provisions removed by Republican leaders from Democratic Governor Tony Evers' budget. There's a lot more to it that we're going to get into. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jordan is with us in Marengo. Jordan, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me. My comment would be, every time there's a surplus, the whole thing about giving tax refunds becomes kind of a political football. And I just kind of see it as short-term pandering that kind of sets the wealthy against the rest of us in terms of who's getting it. So I would rather see any budget surpluses be put into long-term beneficial things like energy infrastructure, transportation infrastructure, things that benefit the whole state instead of just becoming another political football. And thanks for your time. I appreciate you.
Jordan, thanks a lot for calling in. Senator Johnson, Governor Evers' original budget plan had some tax cuts in it. Republicans also looking for that as well. What do you think about that question about how to balance what to do with the surplus between tax relief versus investing in, as Jordan said, things like infrastructure?
I completely agree with that 100%. There are better things that we could be doing with those tax dollars that would, generate long-term gain for the state. One of the things that was pulled out of the budget that I was extremely sad to see go was the tuition promise. We all know how expensive college is right now for our young people and their families. And for that very reason, so many just smart, intelligent young minds don't get to go on to higher education. The tuition promise would have allowed children whose families made gross under $62,000 to go to college for free. Now, that didn't include room and board. That was just tuition. But the important aspect of that is that we know that we have a worker shortage right now. And we also know that those immediate fixes are not going to work. We know as a state that worker shortage is going to continually get worse, especially by 2035. So allowing these kids the opportunity to stay here at home, to go to college here at home, and to have that tuition paid means that we're going to have a more educated workforce. It's going to be better for innovation. It's going to be better for those higher paying jobs to come into the state. And it helps us keep our talent right here at home. The one thing that we know is that over these last 10 years, we have had a zero net gain in terms of immigration, meaning there have been more people leaving this state than we have had coming into this state. And that is a huge problem. We didn't start to see just a little bit of an uptick of people moving into the state until after 2020, which was around 2021. What the state doesn't know is if these individuals were moving to Wisconsin because of work, or if it was the younger people who were moving back home because of the pandemic. But either way it goes, the state cannot continue to function with our residents making a mass exodus for the border, because we will continue to see that worker shortage and it won't benefit the state at all.
Jordan, thanks for that call. We're talking to Wisconsin State Senator LaTanya Johnson from Milwaukee, member of the Joint Finance Committee, taking a look at the ongoing state budget deliberations, what some key proposals mean for the state and for Milwaukee in particular. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Coming up, we're going to look at shared revenue, how state tax money flows back to local communities, what it means for communities around the state, and some special rules for what might happen in Milwaukee. You can join in with your thoughts on that at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Wisconsin Democratic State Senator LaTanya Johnson from Milwaukee. We're talking about her role on the powerful Joint Finance Committee, the Republican proposal to increase state funding for local governments with some strings attached, and her top priorities from Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your top priorities when it comes to the way that state receives and spends money? What do you need in your community? What are you watching most closely that you think affects your neighborhood, your life? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Senator Johnson, Republicans released last week a plan aimed at increasing state funding to local governments by at least 10% in every community. But there's a lot of details, subject of a whole nother conversation on the show today. In Milwaukee in particular, what do you see their proposal doing?
So the proposal for shared revenue for the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County is full of a lot of uncertainty. And I'm not confident that the bill that we see now from the assembly would actually make Milwaukee whole. As a matter of fact, this bill has more poison pills from what I see than I would care to understand. For example, the Police and Fire Commission, we all know the issues that regarding untrust in terms of the police department and the community. Well, the Fire and Police Commission, it basically helps to bridge that level of trust. It gives the community a place to file grievances, to go and have their issues heard, to try and make both fire and police better. Now, there are provisions in this shared budget that calls for additional members, one fire and one police retired individual that lives within the city of Milwaukee. That's not an issue. The concern is removing the policy and oversight from the Fire and Police Commission and giving it back to the fire and police chiefs. That is a no-go. That is exactly what we were trying to move away from, which was to make the whole process more transparent. Also, the two-thirds vote in order for any new spending, new resolutions, or new ordinances. What that basically does, it threatens to put a halt to government business unless it's a two-thirds of votes available. And that's not something that we're interested in. Also, no local referendums. That's a huge concern. The other piece for me, though, is that when we talk about shared revenue and making shared revenue make sense for the communities, the numbers that are involved in this process makes absolutely no sense. For example, there is a community called Popple River here in Wisconsin. Popple River has a population of 43 individuals, right? So Popple River is going from $606 in shared revenue, which is understandable that an increase was definitely needed there. But then it's going to an increase of over, it's going to an increase of over 5,000%. So it would go from $606 to $30,723. On average, that averages out to $729 per person. But you have a community or a county like Green Bay, which is in Brown County with a population of 107,000 individuals, and they only got a 10% increase, which averages out to $159 per person. The math does not make sense. And in Green Bay, You have Lambeau Field. The security that is required to cover that event, just like here in Milwaukee, when you go to a Brewers game or you go to a Bucks game, the city of Milwaukee puts that security cost. And so when you have these larger venues that contribute significantly more in terms of shared revenue, then that money should be sent back to those communities in a much similar basis. But this bill, the only thing that it has that makes sense is that the individuals who were sitting around that table making those decisions decided to give the areas that they represent more money. And that's unfair. The math does not make sense.
I want to key in on a particular item for Milwaukee. Now, some local leaders have been advocating for Milwaukee City and County to be able to raise a local sales tax there. That is included in this with, again, some strings attached, a local referendum required to raise those sale taxes and conditions, I believe, related to having to use them to pay off pension obligations. I want to give a listen to Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss speaking here to the Milwaukee Press Club on Friday.
I've seen the city's budget. And I've seen the county's budget and the bad decisions made by somebody. I'm not going to cast, I don't know every decision made by everybody, but in the past, they made a series of bad decisions that only really allow for one option. Either it's dramatic reductions in police and fire, which I think are bad for our region, or it's a tax increase. People are going to have to decide which is better.
What are your thoughts on the inclusion of a possible Milwaukee sales tax increase as it exists in this particular budget plan?
Okay, so the reality is that we are going to have to do an increased sales tax. We're going to have to do that. If we do not, Milwaukee will see insolvency on January 1st, 2025. That means that the city of Milwaukee will go bankrupt. Period. No discussion. End of topic. Now, the concern for me is that sales tax is basically secured to paying the unfunded pension obligations that we have predominantly for fire and police. That is one of the reasons that we are here, is because the fire and police pensions together make up 60% of the city's operational costs. I believe our operational cost is $721 million total. Police, $300 million, and fire is, I believe, somewhere around $157 million. So together, one is almost 40%, the other is 18%. So that's an issue. But the concern for me regarding this bill is that even with that 2% increase, it does not make the city of Milwaukee whole. It does not take away our deficit. In order for that deficit to be taken away, which will be roughly $156 million hole in 2024, we would need at least 2.1%. But the discouraging part of all of these poison pills that are in this bill is that the city will be expected to pay for audits, ongoing audits, one of which would be we would have to pay for an expenditure report. Then we would have to pay, that's annually. Then every 5 years, we would have to pay for an actuary audit, and then another audit from the Legislative Audit Bureau. There is no cost associated with those audits, so we don't know how much that's going to cost us. So that's an additional cost on top of what our deficit already is that's expected to be paid through shared revenue and this increased sales tax. The other thing is that the state wants Milwaukee Public School to hire 25 resource officers. Now, these resource officers are actual law enforcement officers. That is the requirement. But the city of Milwaukee is expected to pick up the cost for 2/3 of that cost. That's another additional cost that's being attached to our shared revenue and also to this sales tax. And there are a lot of other poison pills. So with the sales tax, we have to maintain the level of fire and police that we currently have right now. So If the sales tax generates any additional revenue on top of what they already anticipate the generated revenue to be, that money then has to go toward hiring more fire and police. At least up to 1,725 police officers and I believe 218 firefighters, right? The downside to that is that there are no provisions for if the shared revenue decreases. So if we find ourselves in a recession, there is nothing to protect us from that obligation, and that's the issue. The other issue is that they want this to go to a referendum. Now, in most cases, you want the community to decide if this is okay for them or not. But in Milwaukee's case, we do not have that time. The quickest that this could go to referendum without us calling for a special election would be in the spring of 2024. Then from that election, we have to give the Department of Revenue up to 120 days to make sure that they can start collecting the tax. We are facing insolvency January 1st, 2025. That does not give us enough time to make sure that we will not hit that cutoff window. The best thing to do is to not have this go to referendum, but to allow the Common Council and the county supervisors to take that vote.
And we'll leave it there. Senator Johnson, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
LaTanya Johnson represents the 6th State Senate District in Milwaukee. She's a Democratic member of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. She joined us for a look at the 2-year state budget plan. We have invites out also to Republican members of Joint Finance.